At the conclusion of 3PO's performance, the barkeep made her way over to him, the diamond rings through her snout twinkling in the bar's dim light.
Your boys ain't half bad. Your boss going to be by here later? Maybe he and I could work out a deal.
Oh, we don't have a boss, madam. Our master is...
Now don't confuse the poor lady, Threezy.
He turned to the barkeep.
Their boss is a buddy of mine on the Antimeridian route. He hates to have even his droids call him boss.
The Chadrafan hustled the two droids out the door, speaking under his breath.
You want to end up playing Sparklebop at this meat market for the next 35 years? She's trying to steal you.
3PO squeaked, What? Steal us?
Once they were in the rain-slicked street, the Chadrafan introduced himself.
Yabuk Yim, reporter for the Trinebulan News. Where is your boss?
My counterpart and I are the property of... R2, what are you doing?
The little astromech swung sharply around, banging his golden counterpart. After considerable thought that fortunately took place so quickly as to give the remark the promptness of truth, 3PO explained,
Our master is waiting for us on Cyblock 12. It is vitally important that we get there with the utmost speed.
Cyblock 12, eh? There's been no word out of there for 30 hours. Now the talk around the bars here is that somebody's supplying the Gopsuo with weapons and promising them the guard stations on the roads are going to be down. And now they are. We've got to get off this festering mud ball.
There was another crescendo of mayhem. Yarbok shifted the small recording device he wore to the front of his belt and scampered in the direction of the commotion. A moment later, combatants came pouring out of the narrow street that ran alongside a large central canal. A knot of uniformed Drovians and a couple of humans, all defending themselves against a much larger contingent of differently uniformed Drovians, whose shaved crania bore topknots in which animal totems of colored plastic and rubber had been braided.
Good gracious! Exclaimed the protocol droid. R2, that's Captain Solo!
Heavily armed, the Gopsuo clansmen ran from their tenements with new weapons in their hands, shouting the names of their murdered ancestors and the 25 personifications of virtue, and firing on their oppressors and anyone they associated with their oppressors. Beside Han, Sergeant Rao Pixar growled,
Stinking scumtoes! You better be proud of your handiwork, Solo.
Han flattened against an alley wall to return fire.
Me? Proud? I never even heard of Nimdrovus until last week.
Pixar went on.
Republic will send troops, they said. No need to have big standing armies. Well, we sent for troops, pal, and they ain't here.
He cursed as laser fire clipped the back of his tentacle. Han thumbed the toggle on his comlink.
Lando! We're on our way back. The Gopsuo are overrunning this whole sector. Have the Falcon ready for liftoff.
3PO called out, Captain Solo! Captain Solo!
But his words did not carry over the shriek of the blasters. Even as 3PO was trying to ascertain how to get through the Gopsuo, Solo and the Drovians disappeared at a run down the narrow street.
The docking bays, Arthur, you're a genius. Of course that's where they'll be going.
They reached the docking bays only moments after the advancing Gopsuo closed in. Blaster fire splattered among the wide, sheltered concrete pads. In places, the Drovian troops had set up ion cannons, driving the Gopsuo back or holding them to the few pads they'd managed to take over. 3PO cried,
There!
As they emerged into the sheltered cargo porch and saw the familiar shape of the Millennium Falcon crouched, entry ramp down. A spattering of blaster fire tore up the pavement before them. Two troops of natives held the two entrances to the bay. Those under the same porch as R2 and 3PO were unfortunately the Gopsuo, a ragged assemblage of guerrilla fighters armed to the teeth with the finest of weaponry. The Drovians, under the other porch, were fewer in number, but 3PO could distinguish Captain Solo among them.
Captain Solo, it's us! Don't leave us!
More laser fire drowned his voice. Solo broke cover, dashed across the open pavement in a light storm of covering fire, and plunged up the boarding ramp. The ramp started to lift the moment his feet touched its end. It gulped him up like a steel monster slurping up a treat.
Don't leave us!
The souped-up freighter tore a hole in the rain-black clouds and was gone. Luke saw the six speeders round the corner into the yard of the Blue Blurred Cafe. A couple of volunteer guards rode Koopas behind them, blaster rifles slung in the ready position, faces blacked and eyes glittering in the watery flicker of the stars. Gurney Caslow approached and tossed Luke a small flat can of the dark camouflage paint that hunters use to take the glint off their weapons.
"Fourth in line," he whispered. "Rendezvous at Ashgad's if we get split up."
Luke blacked his face and touched up the crude pair of infrared goggles Aunt Jin had lent him. Ashgad was putting out a lot of money to get himself in the position of leader of the ruling faction of the planet, he thought. Still, he felt there was some piece of information he didn't have that would make sense of this. Ahead, he saw the spark of laser cannon illuminate the spine of the hills. As if in answer, another glinted 60 degrees beyond the horizon. Before them, the loose ring of the crystalline cousins pointed at the stars. Tiny in the hard black vault overhead, a pin light exploded, faded. Someone cursed the Therans. Luke slowed his newly repaired speeder as a flicker far up in the sky signaled a minute capsule of smuggled goods. Caslow marked where the capsule came down, every driver triangulating on the 10 icy pinnacles. And they raced for them over the vast dish of the plain. Men were handing crates up out of the pit, passing them to the drivers. A flurry of shots in the distance told Luke of approaching Therans, held off by the ragged perimeter of guards. Someone gave him a bale of blaster rifles, which he stowed in the back of his speeder. They were passing rifles up singly now. He caught one, held it in the dim glow of the speeder's console lights to see the make. On the butt was the silver coating plate of the New Republic Honor Guards. The gun had come off the Borealis. Leia's ship. For the first time in days, Leia had awakened with her mind clear. Ashgad had left that morning to spend 3 days in Huegshul, and the water Lygias had brought her had been clean. Whether that had been an oversight or a gift to her, she knew she had to take advantage of it without delay. She drank it all the moment she realized it wasn't drugged. "I have to escape," she thought. In her mind, she cried out, "Luke!" sending the word out across the emptiness of air and crystal and early light.
"Luke!"
But the force only filled her with the alien sense of its presence. It was like the sound of the sea, drowning all other voices in its great voice. She returned to the bedchamber and sat on the end of the divan. They had released the death seed. If they could control it, or thought they could control it, through Zim, it was an easy guess what the negotiations with Moff Gitellis and Admiral Larm were about. "Curse them," she thought. Zim was somehow a key. He could lay the plague on them, transmitted by the synth droids, and call it off as he had called it off her. She remembered the ecstasy on his face at times. At other times, his air of paying attention to something else, like a man counting down time. And yet, what was the point? Did Moff Gitellis really think that he was strong enough to take over the Meridian Sector once quarantine and containment procedures got underway, to hold it in the face of a concerted Republic effort to drive him out? And for what purpose? Pedusis Koryos, that nest of smugglers and warlords, would be impossible to control effectively. Djurin's planetary coalition was solidly behind the Republic. Namkoryos was a waterless, lifeless rock. "To complete the Reliant," Ashgad had said. But she'd seen the Reliant. It was not a planet-killing dreadnought, but a mid-sized freighter. What kind of payload could it carry that would make all this worthwhile, even were the gun stations to be eliminated? The door chime sounded. Lygias entered and glanced at the empty water pitcher. "I'm glad you're feeling better, my dear. I couldn't bear to see you killing yourself like that." He didn't quite glance back over his shoulder, but almost. "I've changed the combination on the door pad. Zim shouldn't be able to get in here." He made a move to turn away, and Leia caught his sleeve. "Who is he? What is he?" The dark eyes looked quickly away, and she saw his mouth flinch. "He's a native of this world." Leia felt his hand cold under the grip of her fingers. "There are no natives of this world.
Before the Grismoth started shipping political prisoners here, there was nothing here but stones. What is it he wants with me?
Ligeus answered quickly.
I can't explain. It's something few people would understand.
The fear in his eyes was terrible to see. After he had gone, Leia sat for a moment, gathering her breath and her courage. Then she got up, crossed to the dresser, where she kept her gown, the pins, and jewels that had been in her hair. Two of the flat-back jewels from the robe, picked loose, gave her enough purchase to bend the end of one of her hairpins into a makeshift screwdriver. Lock-picking was one of those guerrilla survival skills she'd acquired in her years with the Rebellion, like making explosives out of certain brands of game tokens, or tinkering water filters from sand and flight suit liners. Something simple that might just save your life. An hour and a half afternoon, as far as she could judge from the angle of the sunlight, the lock opened. Leia reached back to feel the comforting hardness of the lightsaber tied around her body beneath her shirt, and stepped out into the hall. Pausing at the foot of the stair, Leia shut her eyes, slowed her breath, and listened deeply to the house. Beldorian's thick voice came from his quarters close by.
Beautiful! All that from just those unprepossessing little gletmites.
And the harsh, nasally whine of the Kuba's chef.
It's all in finding the correct solution, you see, master.
Of Zim, she could hear nothing. She found her way out of the dim curtained quarters of the hut to a door into what was clearly Seti Ashgard's portion of the house, a long chamber that looked out onto the terrace below her own balcony. The monitor screen in the niche above Ashgard's desk was new. Leia pulled up data on the house itself. Wiring diagram showed her the shaft that led down through the heart of the mesa to the garage from which she'd seen Ashgard's henchmen take an elegant little speeder at dawn. On the other side of the house were the docking bay and its compound of workshops and labs. She ran a print of the house and another on some of the names she'd overheard Ashgard and Zim mention, then folded the sheets of plast together, stuffed them into the pocket of her trousers, and went to investigate what was behind the slatted doors that rated a separate power backup. It was a CCIR board, the central control unit for synth droids. Leia counted wiring for 24. She continued to make her way through the house until she reached the dark access hatch for the maintenance stair. The blade of her lightsaber didn't give much light, but at least it was better than groping down in utter dark. Something whipped out of sight down the first curve of the flight. The smell of Drox was choking. Then there was a small upright form, like a huge Drox, on the step ahead of her. It pounced on a particularly gross Droc, catching it in a pincer that seemed to alter in shape and transform into a gulping mouth. For a moment, she heard it purr, a soft little thrum of deep pleasure. Then it swung back, eye stalks swiveling to face her again. Leia extended the lightsaber at the thing. Something dropped from the ceiling, landing on her shoulder with a wet plop. Pain stabbed through her. She cried out and tried to pull it loose. Something else fastened on her leg. She whipped the lightsaber around, shrinking in terror from the glowing blade that she knew could take her own arm off as she touched it to the parasite on her shoulder. It frizzled horribly, and the pain it felt went through her like a knife. And in her dreamy, sickened weakness, she felt it die. She turned the blade and fried the thing on her leg, taking the pain, her strength ebbing with its death. Leia backed up, catching her heel on the stair, clinging to the walls, sobbing, trying to breathe, fighting not to sink into that cool, welcoming sleep that beckoned. She stumbled upward. She fell through the door, lay panting, cold, unable to breathe or think. But in the slow, sinking dimness, she heard movement, the heavy, thick panting of Beldorian, heading her way. She tried to stand, but couldn't, so she crawled through the house. It took everything she had to climb the stairs to her room, where she collapsed on the floor until finally she had the strength to study the printouts she had made. It was all there on the pale green plast. Seti Ashgard's communication with Moff Gitelli's, making arrangements to destroy the gun stations in return for weaponry and first cut of the profits when Lorinar Corporation moved in on Nam Koryos to strip mine it for its crystals. Memos from Demura, who turned out to be CEO of Lorinar, detailing which minorities, disaffected factions, and splinter groups would rise in revolt, armed at Lorinar's expense, in order to split the Republic's peacekeeping fleet and allow Gatelli's Admiral Larm to move in. Of the plague, there was little mention. In a memo to Gatelli's, Ashgard said only, "Be assured that it is in my power to completely control the outbreak and spread of this malady, and I offer you my personal guarantees that it will not affect anyone other than those on the Republic ships and bases." And bases, thought Leia, breathless. The Republic was in chaos. They'd poisoned poor Riakin. And for what? Hands shaking, she shuffled through the flimsoplast pages. There it was. Lorinar Corporation's plan to build a new facility on Antimeridius for the manufacture of both synth droids and something called needles. Programmable, long-distance mini-weapons with infinite range and hyperspace rendezvous capability, controlled by the same CCIR crystals. Programmable. And the source of the crystals was Nam Koryos. The Reliant. Paperwork was complete on that, too. A modified I-7 Howl Runner hull with extra capacity. Lorinar Corporation had been making drops of components and materials for months. Ligeus Harpatius Vorn was mentioned as the vessel's designer and programmer, but his chief value lay in expert hollow faking. There were requests for specific digitalized scrap of her and of her flagship and escort to be mocked up into transmissions describing the safe conclusion of the conference between Ashgard and herself and the two vessels' entry into hyperspace. Her stomach twisted with sick betrayal. The purplish twilight of day was dimming into night when Leia decided to make her escape. She rolled up a blanket and filled a bottle with water. Then she was ready. The door pad combination had been changed while she slept, and she activated her lightsaber and drove it into the innards of the lock. It was now or never. She could afford no delay. Ashgard's study first. She called up the main files, ran a scan and print on everything concerning the Death Seed. Then she paged through the directories until she found what she needed. Maps of the area, elevations, travel guides. 16 kilometers away was one of the gun stations, on a shoulder of the mountains called Bleak Point. She thought she could reach it, keeping to the hem of the foothills for cover. A thought crossed her mind. She opened the slatted doors into the small chamber where the CCIR central control unit stood, amber power lights glowing in the dark. Her hand was on the toggle of her lightsaber, when the swish of the outer doors froze her where she stood. Then voices sounded in the room, and she barely had time to pull shut the doors that concealed the control unit. Leia turned one of the slats of the door, put her eye to it. No light had come up in the long study, and the fading daylight outside did not reach to its inner wall. She could make out faces, and she thought Ashgard was wearing a gray or white cap of some sort. Of Zim, she could distinguish almost nothing, save a slumped, dark suggestion of evil, a gleam of eyes. Ashgard spoke, almost too low to hear.
"It was a long journey. Look at me."
The old man's voice cracked, and Leia realized that he wasn't wearing a cap, as she had thought. His black hair had grayed almost to whiteness. Zim stepped sideways. Leia saw the black top knot silhouetted against the glint of the computer's power lights and the spidery motion of his hands as he unfastened the breast of his robe. In the gleam of the lights in which he now stood, she saw that below his neck his skin changed. It was hard, shell-like, and all over his bare chest and shoulders were tubes and orifices and groping little mouth nodules that had no business on any human form. These openings gaped and stretched, dark matter running down, glistening. Zim's human mouth opened as well, the long tongue groping like a serpent. With a noise that was not quite a whimper, not quite a sob, Ashgard bent his head down. He pressed his mouth to Zim's chest. And with a horrible movement impossible for a human neck, Zim moved his head around, tongue probing at Ashgard's nape. After a silence of several minutes, Ashgard whispered, "Thank you." The crackle of age was gone from his voice. The room was fully dark now, and only the faintest stain of orange remained in the sky outside. But Leia thought his hair had darkened perceptibly. And when the two left the room, Ashgard moved like a young man. She timed their footfalls, ascending the stair, knowing she had only minutes now. The lightsaber flashed to life in her hand, and she drove it deep into the center of the control unit in a vicious hiss of sparks and smoke. Then she fled. Another door. A synth droid standing in the laboratory beyond, eyes glazed, mouth open as it staggered numbly from wall to wall. Leia brushed past it, and it fell. The storeroom containing the anti-grav units was right where the print of the house said it would be. She grabbed one. The permacrete pad that formed the southeastern quarter of Ashgard's compound overlooked open space on two sides. The Reliant sat on five short legs, close by the door through which she emerged. In smaller hangars to the side, she made out the needle-like nose cone of an elderly headhunter and the blunt silhouette of a gutted skip-ray blast boat. Synth droids lay about like heaps of laundry. Leia went to the edge of the pad and looked down. Her heart froze. It was easily 300 meters to the base of that first sheer drop. From there, the slope tapered steeply, a shamble of diamonds, bled of color in the etiolated light. Behind her, in the dark house, she saw a light go up, then another. The image returned to her mind of Ashgard bending down to the mouths and tentacles of Zim's chest. Leia checked the power on her antigrav unit. It wasn't enough. "I'm going to smash to a million pieces," she thought. The night around her, the subtly flashing darkness whispered, "You walls, we're here. Trust." More light sprang up, and then she heard Ashgard call,
"Ligeus, here, at once."
They found the synth droids. Leia stepped off the edge of the platform.
"Luke!"
Leia was calling him. Luke jolted out of sleep, shocked, breathless in the chilly dawn. The image of her was etched on his mind. She was on a stone terrace, wrapped in a white blanket, cinnamon hair lying in a long, disheveled braid down her shoulder. There was something about the image that told him that this had happened some time ago, that it had been caught up in the distortions of the Force, but he knew it was real. Ashgard. He hadn't just destroyed her ship, looted it for weapons. He'd kidnapped her. Tiselda had said that Ashgard's house was at the foot of the Mountain of Lightning. He reached out his mind.
"Leia, I'm on my way."
As 3PO and R2 looked on, the Chadrafan journalist, Yem Yarbo, took data cubes out of his pocket.
"It's the Lorinar Corporation. On every one of these planets, every place in the Meridian Sector where there's been an armed revolt or uprisings from minority tribes, the dissident forces are always armed with Lorinar weapons. Top-of-the-line blasters and grenades and ion cannons. Look at these."
R2-D2, taking him at his word, promptly extruded a gripper arm, picked up a cube, and withdrew the arm into his own vitals. The three journeyers were in the waiting chamber of the quarantine enforcement cruiser Lycoming. They had escaped from Bagsho on a Gamorrean ship piloted by a Captain Ugmush and her three husbands. Just outside the outlying asteroid fields of the Drovian system, they had encountered a Republic cruiser, Empyrean, firing furiously in all directions without any target immediately apparent, until the flash of one of the cruiser's shield generators blowing up had illuminated what at first appeared to be a cloud of space debris surrounding the vessel like flies. Yarbok, standing at the elbow of the Gamorrean Captain Ugmush and peering back and forth between R2's readouts and those on the console, had whispered,
"No principal ship, just weapons. It's got to be centrally controlled somehow.
With the Empyrean destroyed and the dagger-like little weapons with it, Ugmush had insisted they go back to search for salvage. They were looting the wreck when the Lycoming made its appearance. Its captain, a Gotal female in charge of a small troop of guards and a squad of medics from the Coruscant Institute, had picked up the Empyrean's distress call and was not amused by the presence of the Gamorrean free traders at the wreck site. She had arrested the lot of them. But even as they were brought aboard the Lycoming, Yarbok had had time to inspect the salvage the Gamorreans had pulled out and to seize something of value for himself. As the access hatch in R2's side slid open and his gripper arm deposited the cube on the table in front of Yarbok, the journalist snatched it up.
Tri-Nebulan will pay me a fortune for that.
At that moment, 3PO was summoned forth to speak to the captain. Prepared to cooperate, he nonetheless found himself looking down the barrels of two blasters and a disruptor. He drew himself up to his full height.
I am a certified protocol droid belonging to Her Excellency Chief of State Leia Organa Solo. She has been kidnapped. You must...
The Gotal had a weary edge to her voice.
Her Excellency, my friend, just transmitted authorization for our mission in this sector. I've spoken to her.
She left authorized holograms of herself for contingency purposes before she left on the secret mission. That's standard procedure. But she isn't really there. My counterpart and I are the only ones who know her true whereabouts.
The captain's eyes hardened to steel.
Get him out of here. Get that R2 as well. And put that Chadrafan journalist they were with in the airlock. And don't let him out.
Panting, hands bleeding, knees torn, gold ceremonial boots in ruins, Leia shinnied up the wall of the blunt black gun station at Bleak Point. When she reached the top, she crept, exhausted, to the cluster of shielded coils, reflectors, and modulators that rose among the jury-rigged defensive works. The great laser cannons pointed at the sky. Leia cut through the locks on the doors that led to the station below, barricading the doors as well as she could behind her. Hundreds of fingernail-sized drops crawled in the stairway. Some crept purposefully in her direction. Leia activated her lightsaber and flicked them with its tip. Those she touched sizzled and curled into balls of charred death. The others crawled after her as she descended the stairs. The equipment in the station was old but serviceable. Leia flicked the test switches experimentally, studied the readouts. A steel ladder in the center of the floor communicated with the lower level, and she saw that there was equipment there, too. Overhead, boots clunked, and the hard white beam of a sodium light flickered down the opening in the floor. Voices murmured. Leia's cold hands slid over the switch on the lightsaber. A shadow came down two steps of the ladder, then dropped lightly to the floor and stepped at once into shadows. A trained warrior seeking cover. There was movement, and the blade of a lightsaber stabbed into existence. A woman's voice said, "Come out." Leia lowered her own weapon.
"Callista?"
The blade lowered, and a figure in a red jacket pushed away the veils that wrapped her face.
"Leia?"
Leia lowered her own weapon. Callista's strong fingers pulled the roll of silver space tape taut, sliced it, and attached a cutout sole of Koopa leather to the ruin of Leia's boot.
"We are the weapons of the Force,"
she said.
"We always have been, since the beginning of the Order."
The face that had been Cray Mingla's had changed. Look as she might for the features of the young scientist who had given up her body to Callista, that she herself might find her lover on the other side, Leia could see only the lost Jedi, the woman her brother loved so deeply. One of the Therans was setting up a small electro-heater to make supper. The evening wind had stilled. Bay, the troop listener, a twig of a man who might have been 30 or 50, passed like a shadow among the riders, who spread blankets, cleaned weapons, spoke softly among themselves. Callista went on, speaking almost to herself.
"I'm like Luke. I never wanted power, only to learn. But people use those who have our power, Leia.
There's a woman in Wakeshul named Tasselda, a small-time Jedi adept who came to this planet centuries ago seeking power. Leia nodded. Beldorian spoke of her. Was he her partner? They came here together. They were both adepts, but neither had much power. Only one of them had sufficient training to make a lightsaber, but I don't know which. Like me, they came here seeking an easy answer. Suddenly sure of it, Leia said, "You were the slave Lygia spoke of, weren't you? The one Beldorian sold or traded to Zim." Callista was so silent for so long that Leia feared she'd angered her, but then she nodded. "Having been Tasselda's slave before, I let myself be enslaved because I was so desperate. She used me, as Beldorian would have used me, had I been any good to him, as he'd have used you. As long as I can be manipulated like that, as long as I lack my own power in the Force, I am a prime candidate for the dark side. I'm standing in its shadow now. If there is a way for me at all, I have to follow it alone. I will love Luke until the day I die, but I will not pull him into that shadow with me. Please, Leia, make him understand." Against the dry starlight, Seti Ashgad's compound was a matte-black jumble of square shapes, punctuated by minute glowing rectangles of yellow and white light. From the dense shadow at the base of the plateau, Luke stood by the hangar, looking up the cliff face and wondering which one of those lights marked Leia's prison. The lightsaber hummed to life in his hand. From the parking bay, permacrete steps ascended to a landing, then turned out of his view. Cautiously, Luke began to climb. Pain stabbed him in the calf, and he looked down to see half a dozen drops wriggling up his boots. Several had bitten into the flesh already. He fell back, appalled, and something struck him from behind. Pain, like the slice of a chisel, jabbed the back of his neck. He flung himself back against the wall, crushing whatever it was against the permacrete, but as if that had been a signal, the drops on the floor skittered toward him. Weakness flowed over him with the agony of 100 bites, as if all his veins had been opened. This was not blood loss, he knew, but life loss. On the steps ahead of him, Luke saw the biggest drock of all, nearly twice the size of his two fists bunched together, staring at him with two bright eyes on short stalks. And he thought, it's sentient, or nearly so. He cut at it, staggering with weakness. The thing sprang aside, and more flowed toward him from up the stairs and below. He thought, I can't use the Force. It will destroy some other place. But when they fastened on him again, stabbing with greedy mouths through the ripped cloth of his suit, panic and horror seized him, and he knew that he must use the Force or die. Like a whirlwind, the psychokinetic energy ripped and chopped at them, plucked them up and flung them against the walls, down the steps. And Luke had glimpses of the bigger drops seizing and fastening their mouths upon the smaller, then hurling themselves at him. He directed the Force before him and staggered up the stairs, while above him he had the sense of that one huge and sentient drop retreating, watching him with those bright eye stalks, claws clicking on the floor. What's that? Leia whirled at something that was less a sound than a stabbing in her mind. From far below in the tower, there came a crash. The listener bay caught up a lamp and sprang to the downward leading door. At the same moment, one of the other Therans camped on the roof cried out, pointing. With a shiver, Leia saw one of the grenade launchers rise from where it lay and begin to smite itself against the black shielding of the central gun. The Force, whispered Callista. Someone is using the Force. Leia shuddered. Beldorian? Maybe. He still has that power, though he can't use it as once he could. That's why he wanted you under his control. The Force here, could it have done something to him? Callista shook her head. Not the Force. Zim and the Drox. They're life drinkers, Leia. They are the Death Seed Plague. The Grismoths knew. They seeded the planet with Drox, hoping those political foes they exiled here would die. But the light of the sun fragmenting through the crystals generates a radiation that weakens the electrochemical bonds of their tissues. I don't know how the Prophet Theras knew this, Callista went on. So little is known of him. Certainly he never knew that it was the Drax that caused the plague, only that no ship large enough to carry heavy shielding should be permitted to leave the planet. He may have been a spy or a politician opposed to the Grismoths, but he understood that the planet must be kept in quarantine. Over the years, that must have extended to forbidding larger ships to land. Somehow, he must have known there was a connection. Leia thought it over. And Ashgad took them out in the flesh of the synth droids. How could he do that? How could he get them past the quarantine screens? How can Zim control them the way he does? Callista looked at her intently. I can't prove this, but I think the Drax are sentient. After a fashion, they mimic shapes, chemistry, electromagnetic currents, anything, down to the cellular level. That's why they can't be detected. I think in some ways they mimic intelligence as well. They become the same substance as their hosts, even as they're drawing the life out of them and into themselves. And the big ones, the Captain Drax, can draw life out of the victims through the smaller ones, without themselves attaching to their hosts. That's when they get dangerous. The more life they drink, their victims or each other's, the more intelligent they become. The stab of pain and terror struck Leia again, and 100 meters off, the black mouth of the canyon suddenly spewed forth a whirl of dust. No wind stirred, but she saw boulders, slabs of crystal and granite and basalt leap like fish in the maelstrom, and heard the crash of them striking the canyon's walls. Callista sprang to the top of the parapet and stared out across the salt-white wasteland. When she jumped down, her eyes were grave. That's too big for it to be simply Baldorian looking for you. Something else is going on. Callista! Pei cried out a warning. At the same moment, wind erupted from below the parapet, pouring out of the canyons all around the gun station. The beams and timbers of the defensive works began to shake, wire and rivets groaning and writhing like live things. One of the flamethrowers began to spout fire. They caught it up, hurled it over the parapet, and Leia saw it explode halfway down the face of the tower. While other Therans grabbed metal cable that fell from the beams, Callista knocked ammunition loads and power cores out of every weapon she could lay hands on and hurled them after the flamethrower. A coil of razor wire sprang loose and lashed across Leia's back like a whip as Callista dragged her to the cable the Therans used to climb the tower. Climbing down a cable after having rappelled up only hours ago was the last thing Leia wanted to do. But she felt the force of the horror building, not diminishing. It seemed to her she descended forever with flying boulders shattering against the tower walls and beams and wire raining down past her. How Pei and Callista guided the band to the Koopas and speeders clustered on the canyon ridge she didn't know. All the while, Leia could hear Luke's voice, feel his consciousness in the storm.
Leia.
Luke stumbled and let the force around him fade and ease. She's up there, he thought. Or someone who knows where she is. The stench of Drax washed over him as he neared a door deep in the plateau. Walls, ceiling, and floor swarmed with Drax. A man lay in the midst of the room. He had ceased trying to get up, though he plucked weakly at the squirming things as they covered his face. Luke raised his hand to summon the force again when movement flickered in the doorway on the opposite wall, and a soft voice whispered,
"Now, now, what have we here? Shoo, shoo."
The Drax scuttered from their victim, and Luke slapped the glow rod on his chest to off, concealing himself in the dimness of the room. The man walking toward him from the doorway he recognized as Seti Ashgad's secretary, Zim. Again, Zim whispered,
"Shoo, shoo."
The big, stalk-eyed Drax started to scamper for the doorway where Luke stood, but Zim strode forward and caught it. He pulled off one glove with his small, sharp teeth, and Luke saw that his hand bore only the most superficial resemblance to a human appendage. It was, in fact, a sort of mouth, orifices gaping on the palm and at the ends of the fingers, which Zim fastened around the huge Drax body. Zim closed his eyes and drew deep his breath. The Drak squirmed, weaker and weaker, and Zim smiled in his reverie. At his feet, the prone man rolled over and tried feebly to rise. Zim put his foot down hard on the victim's chest.
I thought we had an understanding, Legis. I thought you knew what the boundaries of Seti Ashgal's house were to be. Tell me that you knew.
Ligeus whispered,
I knew.
Zim lifted the still wriggling superdruck to his face and chewed at it with his mouth, murmuring and sighing. Ligeus made a weak noise of protest.
Please, Ashgad, I haven't finished installing the launch vectors.
But Zim was clearly not paying attention. His eyes were shut in ecstasy. Then Ligeus whispered,
Leia.
And Luke's decision was set. Lightsaber flaring to life in his hand, Luke reached out with the force and pulled Zim from Ligeus, hurling Zim against the wall. But the small man was nimble and swift. He twisted as he struck the wall, mouth parting in a hiss of rage. And for a moment, Luke felt the force used to strike at him in return. Not an expert's blow, not trained, but weakened as he was by the Drax, it was strong enough to knock him back against the wall. He caught his balance, sprang forward, and Zim backed away from him, the front of his robe falling open to reveal a squirming mess of tubes and tentacles and secondary mouths. The force smote Luke again, weak and secondhand, absorbed from someone else, he thought. Then Zim was gone.
He'll use the Drax who've bitten you.
Luke turned. The man on the floor tried to reach out to him. He continued weakly,
They're his to command.
Luke knelt at his side.
Where is Lady Solo? Gone. Fled. Looking for her. Beldorian and Ashgard.
Half dragging, half carrying Ligeus, Luke descended the stairs, shaky himself and sickened with weakness. In the hangar, Luke dumped Ligeus' unconscious body into the sleek black Mobquit speeder, climbed in himself, and they raced through the night. The Theron riders took refuge in a grotto deep in the hills. For a long time, they heard boulders crashing like pebbles in the surf against the canyon walls. Finally, it was silent. Leia asked softly,
Who is Zim? He's keeping Ashgard alive, isn't he?
Callista nodded.
As he's kept Beldorian alive. He's the key to Ashgard's deal with Lorinar. The key to your kidnapping and poor old Ligeus' ability to cut a perfect holofake. He's the one who could set the Drax to drink the life out of the ship's crews at a certain moment and no sooner. He controls them.
Leia shook her head. That doesn't tell me who he is or how he can do this.
He can do this. Callista paused. Because Zim is a hormonally altered, mutated, and vastly overgrown 250-year-old Drak.
As the Mobquit coursed over the hills, Ligeus said weakly to Luke,
Up the canyon. Death Seat takes less than half an hour.
Luke's breath was beginning to drag hard by the time he halted the speeder, as far up a crevice of crystalline scree as he could manage to ascend. Ligeus regarded him with eyes drunk with fatigue.
Ground lightning kills them. Rig a jump circuit field through the crystals.
Immediately, Luke began dismantling the speeder's engine. A Mobquit chariot could not generate 1,000th the power of the ground lightning storms. But once a crude circuit had been wired to push electricity through the huge fragments of crystal that littered the talus slope underfoot, the dim tingling of low-level current was palpable. Ligeus whispered weakly,
It won't kill the Drax, but it weakens them to the point where they can't draw off our energy and transmit it to Zim. When the sun rises, we should be well.